here on the San Mateo Coast, the fog rolls in and covers everything. It can make the world feel a little mysterious, a little hidden. And in a way, that's how a lot of us feel about our food system. We know it's out there, but the real stories, the people behind the produce, can get lost in the mist. I'm your host, Ranger Kelak. I'm an ag educator, a business coach, and a future farmer myself. And I'm obsessed with pulling back that curtain. This is The Foggy Farmer, the podcast where we get to know the growers, ranchers, and innovators who are shaping the future of agriculture right here on the coast and beyond. We're here to dig into their stories, learn from their hard-won wisdom, and highlight the incredible work being done to build a more resilient and connected food system. So grab a cup of coffee and let's get to know the people who feed us. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the Foggy Farmer Podcast. What does a bridge builder have in common with the future of our food system? Now, a bridge doesn't just connect two pieces of land. It connects communities, it creates opportunities, and it makes essential resources accessible. And without strong bridges, we become isolated, and the things we depend on can feel a world away. Today, one of the most critical gaps in our society is the growing disconnect between people and the source of their food. This isn't just a problem for farmers, it's a challenge for the health of our kids and the resilience of our entire community. And our guest today is an expert bridge builder. Amy Bono is the new ranch superintendent at Elkis Ranch, a cornerstone of agricultural and environmental education here on the coastside for nearly 50 years. She has dedicated her career to building and strengthening the bridges that connect our community, especially children, to the land. She spent a decade as an educator at Elkis Ranch before leaving to become the award-winning executive director of the HEAL Project, where she built an acclaimed program founded on health, environmental, and agricultural literacy. Now, she has returned to lead Elkis into its next chapter with a powerful vision to expand its outreach, deepen its educational impact, and strengthen its role as a vital link between our community and the agricultural world that sustains it. This is a conversation about the power of hands-on education, the art of community outreach, and what it takes to build the bridges that will nourish the next generation. Amy, thank you so much for joining us on The Foggy Farmer.
Thank you for inviting me, Ranger. I'm honored.
Of course. Now, I talked a little bit about you in the introduction, but could you just tell us a little about who you are and what Elkis claims to do?
Yeah, so I have lived on the coast all of my adult life, and I was a zookeeper prior to doing either of the jobs you'd already listed. And when I came to Elkis on a field trip when my son was about four, the ranch coordinator at that time had asked if I'd be interested in applying for a job, and I did. So when my kids were little, I was here for about 10 years. And it was really an impactful job. So I could feel productive, drop my kids off at school, go give back to the community, and then pick them up after school. So it was a nice fit for my life at the time. And it really had changed the trajectory of what I wanted to do. I've always been in nonprofit work, environmental education work, but that really started me more with an ag focus instead of wildlife focus.
Cool. And what about it specifically made you feel more productive or aligned more with your personal values?
Well, I am a, act local, think global kind of girl, and teaching the kids where you live, how the world works and the interconnectedness of not just their food, but the soil, how their food is grown, how they use products and consume things, and what they do with the waste from those things impacts everybody, like whether you live next door or live across the planet. So that was really important to me.
I think that's one of the biggest things to communicate to people, especially the younger generation, is the things that you do matter. It may not be an immediate matter, but later on down the road, every action has a consequence. So absolutely. I think that especially with environmental and agricultural education, it's a lot easier to show that hands-on approach, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And we don't propose that organic is the only way to go. Like, we do propose eating fruits and vegetables is what your body is looking for. And, you wash them whether they're organic or not. So particularly in San Mateo County, we're very wise about how we grow food conventionally as well as organically. The places where I currently work and have previously worked have been organic producers, but that is not what the message is at all. It's just just think about what your choices are and how they impact yourself and your environment.
Yeah, no, totally. And When it comes to those choices and the impact that you make, I noticed that you did spend quite a little bit of time at Elkis Ranch, and then you moved over to the Heal Project, and now you're back at Elkis, where it's almost like returning to your old stomping grounds. And I was just curious, like, what was that process like? What made you leave? What was it like at Heal? And what made you come back to Elkis?
It took me a while to decide to apply for the Elkis job, even though when I worked here as an educator, my coworker was then became the ranch coordinator, Leslie, and she'd been in the job for 20 years by the time she retired. And she'd been telling me for about 5 years that she was going to retire. And this was always my dream job in a lot of ways, because at the Heal Project, it's super impactful. And I made a big change. I made a lot of big changes there. And it would have been pretty comfortable for me to stay there and kind of rest on my laurels. And I did a lot of the goal setting that I mean, I achieved a lot of the goals that I'd wanted to. But when this position opened up, I was waffling back and forth, and I ultimately decided to apply for it. And I have been told it was not a shoo-in just because I worked here before. I was not the guaranteed candidate, so I really had to fight for it. But my experience at the HEAL Project, you know, reaching out to community, aligning, you know, setting my mission, vision, values, and a lot of the structural stuff behind the scenes. I love systems. I love processes. The HEAL Project didn't have them when I started, but they do now. Elkis has a lot of systems and processes higher up, like at the university level, and some might say more than is needed. But from my perspective, my boots on the ground, just I need to set up systems and processes on the ranch. And that's what we've been working on in the year I've been here. I just had my first anniversary last month. And it's been like coming home in a lot of ways. And having said, you know, I did what I wanted to do at the Hill Project, I was torn to leave. I thought I'd retire from there. But I gotta say, my departure has benefited the HEAL Project as well, because it's sort of like founder syndrome. Even though I wasn't a founder, I'd kind of had my vision and achieved it, and I was good. But the new executive director is awesome, and he's doing other great work that was kind of beyond my capacity or my interest. Not interest. He just has different strengths than I did, and he's taking them to the next level as well. So I sort of feel like coming to Elkis is sort of like starting all over again. Over again at the HEAL Project. It is not an independent nonprofit. We are part of the University of California. So I am much more restricted on what I can do. Like, I can't just write and submit a grant. It has to go through the grant department. And I can't just, I don't have a board who I could bounce ideas off. And I want to set up our mission, vision, values, but that is not a simple thing. I can't just like do that with interested bodies. I have to do that with the blessing of the university. So a lot of stuff that I would like to do in this position just will take a little bit longer.
Interesting. Yeah, you can't just go and update the website yourself. You gotta go through the
There's
whole
little things.
process and red tape. And I'm sure there it's all there for a reason. I mean, it's part of the University of
Absolutely.
California season or system is insane. But I mean, just looking at your HEAL projects, the One Planet Challenge Award, J. Russell Kent Award, Pivot Pioneer Award, sustainability. So it's like you're very well decorated in terms of the things you're able to do there. And something that I tell people in my business consulting practice is you are great at certain things. You are great at this, 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 and this. There's somebody who's either better at you in some of those or has different skills, and you want those people on your team. And it sounds like being able to recognize that and see that with the HEAL Project of not even necessarily the things that I didn't want to do or the things I wasn't good at, but just different people and different visions will just benefit the organization in very different and better ways.
Yeah, and yeah, different strengths, because one thing I was praised doing at the HEAL Project, I was great at hiring really intelligent people. There's a phenomenal staff there, and we are doing the same at Elkis. We have people who've stayed here a really long time, and they have strengths just because they're so integrated with the program and what we do. But as we bring in new people, they're bringing in different strengths, and I am including them in the decision making more than has really been the history at Elkis, and having them work with me to set up systems, because it is impractical for me to sort of sit in my office and tell people, well, you need to do it that way, instead of like sitting down, listening to people, letting them tell me their thoughts, and working out a decision together.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of that generic LinkedIn image that you see all the time, which is very true, but it's the one where, what is it, the boss is sitting in the chariot being pulled by everybody, whereas the leader is at the front, like also pulling with everyone. And it sounds like it's very much that, like more of a community, more collaborative, rather than just go do X, Y, and Z.
Right. That's what we're working toward. We are not perfect in any way, but we are, yeah.
Hey, you've only been there for a year.
Yeah, of the long
Yeah.
term. I'm here for a decade. That's my plan.
Lease, we love it. Awesome. So, what exactly are your big plans with Elkis Ranch, moving it to the next chapter and everything that you want to do with it?
Well, it's my position is really unique. You'd mentioned that my role is superintendent. That is going to be announced next year, that that's my new position. I am the ranch coordinator, and we are switching over to a different structural system in the administration. So my job title will change. But this job title, regardless of what the words are, does everything. I pick up seeds at Hassett Hardware after work. So the people who run the garden can, plant what they know are needed for programs. And I'm researching sources of funding. I am doing outreach to local neighbors. Like when I started in June, and so last April, I had an open house just to the neighbors who live in this canyon. It's a really close, involved canyon with people who are really phenomenal supporters of their community, but most of them had never set foot on the ranch. So I had an open house. It was very well received, and I've made connections with that group, and I'm invited to a party of one of the local neighbors next month. I'm very excited. I've lost track of the question you asked, but I just do such a wide range of things. So I supervise 9 people, which is kind of a lot for the amount of nitty-gritty work I have to do too. So I'm just sort of figuring out the system and figuring out ways within the limitations that I can improve it and streamline it and create areas for growth for the rest of the staff, and sort of connect them with what interests them and what their strengths are.
And it sounds like very much right now is that base level foundation of build out the community, build out the staff. Like if you're trying to, again, if you're trying to build the house, you want to have that strong foundation. So what exactly is your vision for Elkis Ranch? What would success look like after 10 years?
That is a great question. So success in 10 years would look like the person in my role is spending less time communicating back and forth and asking the same questions to the hundreds of teachers we see, and have that streamlined, and can register field trips without it being so labor intensive, and then have our systems in place so we are better able to track the health of individual animals and groups of species of animals. We are better connected with the community and better known and understood, and are perceived as welcoming because we don't have an open door policy where people could just drop in, because I just don't have enough staff to be here on weekends. But I have like gone in small steps in that now I have a monthly volunteer day where people are invited to come out and see the place and help us out and then come and hug the animals. And also, as well as like the smaller systems and processes, the bigger things like get a mission, vision, values, have a theory of change that is clear and accurate and understandable. I'm not sure how to do that within the current system, but there is always a way. It's just a matter of figuring it out. And just to be better connected with the community, with similar organizations. I am part of the San Mateo County Office of Education's community-based environmental education programs. And having more connection outside of just the University of California, which has sort of been our history, and have more collaboration across organizations.
Gotcha. So it sounds like a lot of community collaboration and internal systems and processes to streamline those connections.
Right. To make us more efficient. Like, yes, having more staff is a big and important part of what my vision is, but having the staff who's here have more efficient use of their time, just to do their job more efficiently. And that is not a flaw of any individual. It's just kind of we need to figure out the best ways to streamline things, like rolling out a field trip registration, which, disclosure, I borrowed the idea from the HEAL project. We developed one there. So I did my own version of it at Elkis. So it's fewer emails back and forth with every teacher, things like that. We want to find other ways to streamline that. I also have bigger agricultural plans. I would love to set up a fodder system. Pomponio Ranch introduced me to theirs, up to 49% of their food that is normally hay is now done as fodder. So they get seeds, like 7 pounds of seeds grow 25 pounds of fodder. It is higher in nutrients, higher in protein, and is much richer food. And it is cheaper to grow if you have a decent system set up on site. We're starting that in a small scale with our rabbits and then going to try to scale a little bit bigger. We have 125 acres. It's not all developed, but about 7 to 10 of it is developed where we have big fields that are fenced and the animals graze. I don't and will never have enough animals to like really manage the land through their grazing if we continue grazing the way we do. So I'm going to get some cross fencing up and rotate multiple species up on the grazed land. I've talked with RCD, Resource Conservation District for San Mateo County, about partnering with them and getting some native grasses down there just to allow us to sequester more carbon, allow us to absorb more water, and just make the soil more enriched and better able to support more plant life. We will always be wildlife friendly. That being said, we still lock our animals in at night, so the animals that eat other animals go hunt for their native food source instead of our animals. So we are working on improving our animal husbandry just down the line. That's a more that and covers a large a large number of things, but I have a lot of dreams, and I just have to pace myself because I also came at a very fortunate time. The university about 5 years ago had earmarked some piles of funds, pockets of funds, whatever you want to call it, to do some deferred maintenance, which is well overdue. So we have slowly been trying to get some of those jobs done because in the current administration, you just don't know if that money is going to disappear because, you know, the sky is falling. We've already lost all of our nutrition educators out of the county because of federal funds disappearing. I want to have that money spent as effectively, efficiently, and with the most impact possible in the quickest time possible. And, you know, the university is like steering a big ship. Nothing happens really quickly, but, you know, it's not going to start if I don't start something right now. So I'm working with the program manager at the UC level to just prioritize what we're going to do, getting bids out and getting things fixed. Like when I started, I had three big projects, three major roofs. So it was like more than $250,000, more than $250,000 to get these roofs done. And that seems like a lot. Maybe my numbers are wrong, but so we got bids out and it's kind of the rules kind of changed. Like it was a big enough thing. I couldn't just do bids with the three contractors. So now we have to put it out for public bid. So things like that, I'm learning all the time. I will never be able to change the system, but I'm just learning how to work within the system will benefit this place a lot.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's one of the biggest things too, is just understanding not just the opportunities, but like, what are those constraints? And then seeing those constraints as not a thing that's kind of like choking you, but more so as just the rules that you play by.
Yeah, like I could work in any system. I just need to know what the system is and what the rules are.
Yeah, baseball is fun and it has rules. You just gotta play within the rules, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when it comes to all these educational opportunities and programming, what exactly is it that you guys teach the kids? Like, what does that look like when a kid comes to Elkis for a field trip or any other age person, really?
We have field trips is the way that we see the largest percentage of our visitors. So this past year we saw about 8,000 visitors. Three quarters of them were under 18. Most of, but we do have parents come and the parents learn along with the kids. And we are not currently aligned with next generation science standards, which is something I did at my previous role. And I do want to do that. But right now, talking to the teachers, they don't care. They don't benefit from it being standards aligned or not. They want to have a fun, immersive environmental education, hands-on, experiential opportunity for their kids. Some of the kids who come over the hill, we serve beyond San Mateo County, but the bulk of the kids just by proximity come from San Mateo County. Some of these kids coming from over the hill, like drive over 92, they've never seen the ocean before. Is that incredible? They live within spitting distance. or they've never like picked their own bean to eat themselves or tasted a beet, like get a kid to eat a beet. I mean, that's a huge success. You let them draw with the beet on their face after they eat it. That's the secret, by the way. And we send kids home with a plant to plant. So it is trying to let them take their experience they have on a field trip and take it home. So essentially what every field trip from preschool through high school experiences is they get to go in the garden. They get to either, they get to discuss, learn about parts of the plants, taste different parts of the plants, plant either a seed or a plant to take home. Then when bird flu was not an issue, we would let people go in with the chickens. We don't do that right now. It's all hands off with the chickens, but we talk about chickens and why all of the animals at the ranch have a job. A ranch or a farm is a business. Everything has to work. So we have two relatively new kittens. They are really good at ambassadors of why cats have always been on ranches and farms. We have the best mousers I have ever known. So a lot of times when the camps show up or the field trips show up, the kids get to see the cats hunting mice. So they go in the chickens. We have two barns that are more than 100 years old. The lower barn is a museum with a lot of animal artifacts. There's a huge table of bones that the kids get to touch and pick up and explore and, you know, take pictures with. And we have a couple of taxidermied animals. And we also have some animal pelts from local hunters who gave them to us because, you know, you're not going to be able to touch a coyote in real life. So you get to touch the coyote skin. And we have a contact area where our miniature donkeys and our goat does are, our female goats live in there. And that is really what resonates the most with kids because that is what they get the most love from. They get to groom them, they get to pet them, hug them, take pictures. And then the fourth stop, which is the upper barn, is where the sheep live. So we are a wool production facility. Our sheep are don't have the highest quality wool, but we have an annual event every June called Sheep to Shawl, where all the sheep get a haircut. You want to give them a haircut before the hot weather hits. And then we use that wool all year long in our educational programs. We have kids do crafts, they dye wool, they could spin it. Some of these things are not just a field trip. And then we also send teachers home with wool and give them ideas of what to do in the classroom with wool. And we talk about fiber and, you know, wool is not the only fiber. What else might your clothes be made from? And, you know, you show them a plastic bottle, like, does anyone have any clothes made from this? And it blows their mind when they're wearing fleece jackets. It's like a lot of, this is the same material, whether it's recycled from a plastic bottle or not, is not what the point is. It's just, it can come from the same thing. So kids are just made aware of just their environment and just ask questions about where things come from. And recently, also with a partnership with Resource Conservation District, we moved our compost bin because having a lot of livestock creates a lot of animal waste and animal bedding and leftover food. So we moved our compost bin from next to the creek, which is not the most environmentally sound way to locate your compost. And then we moved it to a huge tri-bin compost bunker. And we talked to kids about compost, and we have just been improving the compost bunker to incorporate an ASP system, which blows air to increase the oxygen, to increase the heat, so the quality of our compost is better. And then we give away compost to anyone who's coming visits and wants to have some compost, and the quality of our compost will be better as well.
That's awesome. So a couple of thoughts that I had during that. One of the examples that I like to use, my coaching, consulting, just in general life, is you could read every single book you want about growing tomatoes. You could watch the YouTube videos. You could listen to the podcast. But until you actually get out into the garden, dig a hole and put the seed in and get that harvest, like, you don't really know how to do the thing. And with the kids, they would never be exposed to these things in their normal everyday life. Again, even just from driving over 92, coming over the hill, seeing the water, getting their hands dirty, touching an animal, they're not going to have a sheep in their backyard like some of us did growing up. I guess I'm the exception to that rule in general. But it sounds like that's the major challenge in the area, is people not having that access. Because a lot of the agricultural land is on this side of the hill.
Right. So the coastside kids definitely get it and are more like, oh, we know it all, but we still, you know, sneak some learning in there too.
Yeah, for sure. And then when it comes to those educational programs, What would you say is the unique challenge that you have with the educational programs because we're on this side of the hill or just in the coastal community?
It is remote for a lot of people to make it out here, and for like for schools, transportation is the biggest hurdle. Like you can give all the scholarships you want, but it is not the fee to get here that is the big expense. It is getting transporting kids. So you either have to have a parent population who can afford this elevated insurance policy in order to drive children who are not their own on a field trip, or what is more common, or best yet is provide a bus so everybody's carpooling and in a single vehicle. But buses are like $1,000, $1,500 a day. A lot of schools can't afford that. So what happens with most school visits is it's one parent, one child, one car, and they just come in large numbers. We try to encourage carpooling or bringing other kids, but there are these limitations that are beyond our control and definitely beyond the control of the people in the school district who just don't have the money for a bus or have the ability to put a bunch of kids in one person's car if the district rules are not met.
Yeah, so it almost sounds like there has to be a separate scholarship for transportation in a way, just to get the kids over here to experience it.
I would love that. Like when I win the lottery, I'll give a bunch of my money to a bunch of nonprofits, but I also would love to create a nonprofit that just provides transportation for schools to have field trips because it is hard to pay for. It's also hard to schedule because there's a lot of demand because, schools don't have school buses sitting around anymore.
Yeah, and that reminds me, when I was in college, I took a economic development course, and one of the questions that they had for us was around access to schools and education. And he, if you had like $1 million, what would you do? And people were like, invest in better textbooks, give the teachers a higher salary. And he said, no, the biggest investment was getting the kids shoes to so that they could actually go to the school, right? And it's one of those things where in my mind I'm thinking of, oh, we need more money to send kids to these educational events or pay for their ticket or pay that fee. But it's like a under the rug kind of thing, like, oh, well, how are we even going to get them there? So I think it's just good for people to just be aware of not just the access or where the farm is located, but how you're going to get there is
It's true.
interesting.
Yeah.
Gotcha. What do you think is the biggest misconception about the ag industry from your standpoint?
I think we as a nation have been out of touch with the actual cost of growing food at the scale that needs to be grown to feed our population. Like, people are complaining because prices of things are going up. There's a lot of reasons why they are, but part of it is because, particularly in this county, people who own farms are paying their people living wages. That hasn't always been the case, or providing them with, decent housing. Stuff like that does not come cheap, as we all know, who have to pay for housing. So, I mean, I feel like I have a lot of misconceptions about agricultural education. There's a lot of misconceptions about agricultural education, but agriculture as a whole, it's like it is super important. Once you lose that land, you never you odds are you're never going to get it back. So setting aside land, there are mixed feelings about nonprofits that set aside agricultural land, but I gotta say, it beats the alternative and just, building a bunch of townhomes.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, if you lose that land, it's damn near impossible to get it back, or to remove concrete is not really a feasible thing for the most part. But couple more things. When I was in college, I was the philanthropy chair of my fraternity, and one of the big fundraisers that we did was for the local food pantry on campus, and I called it the WID Conference, WID, which were the three main issues I saw in the food system. And the WID stands for food waste, food insecurity, and food distribution. And if I could go back, I would make it WIDE Conference to add E for education.
Right.
But I'm curious, from the standpoint of Elkis Ranch, what would you say between waste, insecurity, distribution, and education? I have an idea of what you'll say. Of those four, like, what would you say are the main problem that you help solve with Elkis Ranch?
Well, definitely your new letter E. And the E, if you educate people of all ages right, it helps to resolve the other two letters, right? Waste and insecurity and distribution. Waste is, everybody fights against it. But if you are going to not be able to consume your food, if you can't give it to someone else, compost it. Don't throw it in the garbage. That creates a planetary issue. Like San Mateo County, sing the praises of our county again in a state that is also very woke about how to treat the planet. But we have to compost our food waste. And if you educate kids about their ability to take control over their little corner of the world, they don't have to change the world. But if they could help their household compost and sort the recycling and not, you know, be part of making dinner with your mom. So you want to eat the dinner that's made and grow your own food if possible. That's a lot of expectations. And I am not naive in knowing that not everybody has the same resources that me and my kids had growing up. And that is nice that people are aware of that. For the example of giving kids shoes before you give them anything, right? It's just like we used to try to send kids food home at the Heal Project. And some of the families, they have a shared kitchen with multiple families and they don't have storage or they don't have a garden to grow their own. So we have to be a little bit more sensitive to the fact that the baseline, what you consider normal, may not be the baseline for everyone around you.
That's awesome. I love that. Put that on a hat. But I think that's fantastic. A lot of it really does start with education and just being aware and open to the experience of learning. But in terms of being open and looking forward to the experience of learning, I know that you at Elkis have a exciting event next week. So could you just talk a little bit about what you got going on at the ranch?
It is. We have our 50th anniversary. Elkis Ranch was donated to the University of California in 1975. So this is our 50th anniversary this year. And we are having a anniversary party on September 6th from 10 to 2. It is registrations needed because we are going to have lunch, live music, crafts, activities, come and hug the animals, take pictures with the animals. It has been very popular. We're cutting off ticket sales September 1st. So get in there soon. If you can't come to the anniversary party, you can definitely go on our website and come and volunteer. We have rolled out a monthly volunteer program and that has been very popular, very excited about. So there's ways to connect with the ranch, even if you cannot come out on a field trip or come to our party.
Amy, thank you so much. If anybody wants to learn more about Elkis or schedule a field trip or come out and support, what would be the best way for them to do so?
Look us up online. We have a website and there's a programs page. And part of that programs page includes a calendar because we do have some events that are open to the public. Everything is with registration, but we have preschool days in the spring and the fall. We have our sheep to shawl in summer. We have day camps and part of the benefit of having your kids come to camp here is one of the days there's an open house, so parents get to see it. We also do private tours and birthday parties and things like that. The ranch also hosts a conference center, so we have groups of adults that come and they always want to add on a tour to go visit the animals because we're all just kids of some size or another.
For sure. And I will say that I got to visit the ranch during the Farm Fish and Flowers event put on by the Chamber of Commerce in Half Moon Bay. And that was just a fantastic opportunity to see a little bit of everything that you guys are doing over there. And it's super cool. I can't wait to come back and check it out. But Amy, thank you so much for sharing some of your knowledge and wisdom with the listeners. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for your time, Ranger. I appreciate it.
That was such a fantastic conversation. Thank you, Amy and Elkis Ranch, for spending a little bit of time to tell us about what you're doing, what your plans are, and the future direction of Elkis Ranch. I had such a fantastic time visiting last month with the Chamber of Commerce, and I can't wait to get back and check it out in the future and in 10 years when that vision is achieved. I really say that my biggest takeaway is just a reminder of the importance of education and inspiring future generations. If people don't get out into the fields, don't get out and see different things than what they're used to, they're never going to know what's beyond their backyard. So thank you so much for sharing that. And thank you to the listeners for your time and attention today. I really appreciate it. And if you could just take a quick moment, share it with a friend. The only way that we're going to grow this community is by building it ourselves. So take a second to send it to a friend, a colleague, a family member, or share it on Instagram or LinkedIn. But thank you so much. And as always, remember, keep it local, keep it fresh, keep it foggy. I'll see you guys in the next episode.